Good morning. Welcome to our third and final day of the conference. Hope everyone had a good day yesterday and enjoyed the reception last night. So we've got programming today through 2 o'clock. It's all in the room here. We started out with an excellent research presentation this morning, and now it's followed by our technology panel. And I'm going to introduce Brett Kerlin, who's the moderator, and then he will introduce the panelists. Brett's a professor of practice at the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communication at ASU. He's the founding director of the Phoenix Sports Bureau of Cronkite News at Arizona PBS, where students cover professional and intercollegiate sports for a variety of professional media outlets. He's an Emmy Award-winning sports producer and multimedia entrepreneur with more than 16 years experience. He's worked with ESPN, CBS, Fox, and NBC. And now I'll turn it over to Brett for our technology panel.
Good morning, everybody. I'm also a huge baseball fan. This actually comes full circle for me. It's my first job was working on the pregame and postgame shows of the late 90s Chicago White Sox. So here I am. So I'm going to introduce our three panelists here to my right. So we have three panelists who each live somewhere along the continuum of so-called traditional methods, analytics, and technology, and each of whom are taking the kind of next step when it comes to analytics. First to my right, immediate right here is Jared Sims. He's the CEO and founder of Monsterful VR, a New York-based tech startup that produces virtual reality training tools for baseball prospects. Previously, he was the vice president of product for Hyper. Am I saying that right?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
And he also has worked as a product manager, web developer, and UI designer. He's a graduate of George Washington University and is the son of longtime Seattle Mariners broadcaster Dave Sims. To his right there is Matt Ryland. He's a data consultant, operates Power Alley Analytics, previously managed finance teams at Lowe's corporate headquarters, and performed cost and schedule analysis of oil and gas investments at ConocoPhillips. He served for 7 years as a nuclear submarine officer in the U.S. Navy, including a tour on the USS Montpelier.
Montpelier.
There we go. He graduated from North Carolina State University. I'm a Duke fan, so we're going to have some words later. With a degree in mathematics and earned his MBA at the Citadel. And there's Jeremy Booth. Jeremy's the CEO of the New Balance Baseball Future Stars Series and the CEO and president of Program 15 Baseball Player Development, based in Houston. He's also a senior consultant at Monsterful VR, working with Jared. Previously, he spent 9 years as an area scout and supervisor in the Minnesota Twins, Milwaukee Brewers, and Seattle Mariners organizations. So please welcome our three panelists. So my first question for you guys is, where does what you do kind of fit in the larger idea of analytics?
So I think technology is just changing all the time. So analytics, being able to implement all manner of new data in order for predictive analytics to show where a guy can project to the next level. That's one of the things that we're working on, very excited about. I think, you know, the game is changing just as fast as technology and the way that data has become so important. And so, you know, we're at the forefront of that in terms of training. And in addition, looking at where a team can go from the farm system on through, new player acquisitions. That's something that looking at within VR, how do you train and how do you see a pitcher in a different way, and remove something like the pinch hit penalty, being able to see a guy as though it's been like your third time through the lineup, you can jump into our system and face a guy 10,000 times in virtual reality before you actually step up to the plate and see him in real life. And that's one of many ways that technology is and analytics together are able to change the game.
So Power Alley Analytics has found a niche in helping college teams as the technology and analytics that's occurring at the professional level trickles down into colleges. There's a decent amount of technology that's being implemented. They don't have the same financial resources or analytical resources in a lot of cases as professional teams. Coaches know they want the data, but they don't always know what to do with it. So that's where I've been able to help, and the needs are a little bit different. There's not a free agent market, there's not trade deadlines. data on opponents is a little harder to come by. What they're looking for is, given the data, how do they best develop their players over the course of 3 to 4 years?
So with us, what we're doing is we're looking at this next generation of players. And the players that are today at the highest level are beginning to integrate this data, this launch angle, this exit speeds, these spin rates, these things that we're talking about that are raw scores, which are used now obviously to quantify the subjective grades we had in the past, right? So as we're taking this subjective data, we're trying to teach these players at a younger level how to use it, how to integrate into their own development, and to combine that with the subjective grades we've had before. What gets happened with these younger players is that it'll get lost. You know, they'll hear it's a 88 mile an hour exit speed or a 2600 spin rate, and they don't know what that means. All they think is I got to throw harder, and I got to swing up, and I got to do all these different. Well, there's ways to get to that, and so we're able to do with the different levels of objective data is teach them how to use it.
So obviously there's been a number of big technological advancements as far as analytics are concerned over the last few years, and Jeremy, I kind of start with you. Well, first, I guess for all of you, what have been the biggest advancements? But Jeremy, particularly, you kind of live at that intersection of, quote-unquote traditional methods and analytics. Does this rapid development of technologies related to analytics make things easier, harder, or a little bit of both?
So, I mean, once you get past with the player, and each player is different, so there's no one-size-fits-all. Once you get past some of the intimidation or some of the misinformation of what the numbers mean, it makes it a lot easier. We've been able to show swing planes and how the body works and how to use your lower half and how to increase your hand speed and repeat your delivery, and able to take the numbers and take the things that we're using that are not just eyeball test and incorporate. It gets the player an easier way to understand. It gives him an immediate acceptance of what you're telling him and gains some trust. But that said, if you're not able to articulate it, not able to relate it, it makes it much difficult.
Yeah, and I mean, Matt, I imagine you're walking in and dealing with folks who probably aren't as generally educated about all of this. So, how are things different at the collegiate level, and what component of what you do is a bit of just education?
I'd say most of it is education. Almost like they're reading from a script. Coaches say, I know I want the data. I just don't know what to do with it. So there's a lot of on-campus resources a lot of times that the coaches have available. There are statistics departments, economics departments, math departments, sports analytics clubs. But there's a little bit of a gap in the coaches don't know what to ask necessarily. The analytical folks get it and don't necessarily aren't well-versed in baseball, so they maybe come to some conclusions that aren't really actionable. And if they do come up with something that's actionable, they have trouble communicating that back to the coach, making it something that they can then go to players with. So quite a bit of it is playing that middleman and educating on both sides, educating the coaches on the opportunities that are available to help their team, and then educating the quantitative guys on campus as far as what type of analysis they should be going after and how to communicate that back to the coaches.
Jared, how have you seen these technologies develop, particularly on the VR side of things?
In terms of the development, my team is working. We're doing 2-week sprints, and we're integrating all of the feedback that we've gotten from all levels of the game. And so, data is only good in terms of how you use it, and making sure that it works for you in a really helpful way. So, from the standpoint of at the MLB level, we've been asked for a number of different features that we've implemented in the technology versus what Jeremy was just referring to as far as utilizing the data, what your body's doing. We were at an academy not too long ago and saw somebody taking BP or in the cage and just swinging like this and not a healthy, swing. And I think for our product, it's really able to quantify certainly swing plane, exit ball velocity. And that's something that at the youth level, we've focused on implementing ways in which you can train and improve, whereas at the pro level, we've been asked for a lot of different things from the standpoint of API integrations. So it's not just VR, but all of the different peripheral aspects that go along with virtual reality, from machine learning to artificial intelligence to produce smarter versions of a Kershaw, of a Keuchel, a Kluber, such that within the product, it's looking at your data within each session and able to see what you're doing and then exploit different weaknesses that the system picks up. So it's not just VR, but it's really been very interesting to see how all of these different things have come together. Confluence of data and integrating that within sort of an integrated system, I think, is ultimately what's going to win the day.
So Jared, how we kind of touched on it, how do analytics integrate in your VR product? Like, how does it work?
Sure. So number of different ways. So
without revealing any secret sauce, of course.
Sure. So in terms of TrackMan data, we have that to recreate every pitcher's part of the throwing motion is involved with horizontal and vertical release point. We're able to, through a process of reverse kinematics, if your release point's here, say that your elbow's roughly there, shoulder there, and recreate your biomechanics, and then have the exact pitch trajectory and velocities of every pitcher in the game in terms of their arsenal. And so that's sort of one of the starting points. And sort of where it's going next is the ability to add the data for all of the hitters, so such that if you can upload your last five at-bats or a lifetime against a certain pitcher and then see, okay, here's how he was throwing me inside or on a two-strike count. This is typically what pitch he throws, and it's a visualization of the scouting report that I think really translates cognitively in a way that there hasn't been something like this before, where you can take a real at-bat, and with the two strikes on, you're going to get 46% slider in the dirt if that's what the guy throws. And that's something that sticks with you in terms of that muscle memory or just being able to translate that to the field. So it's not just pitcher data, but hitters as well, and matchups, which is really where I think the real power is in terms of being able to improve and prepare yourself for upcoming matchups.
Now, Jeremy, part of what you do is with the New Balance Baseball Future Stars series. So kind of what is that, and what role do analytics play in that? Because you're kind of braving some new territory there as well.
Yes. So one of the problems with high school or amateur baseball, which is, of course, different than college baseball, is you can't quantify equal level of play. You don't know who they're going to play. You go out and scout a kid in the spring, and he could be seeing somebody throwing 78 miles an hour, and the next week you see him throwing 96, and you just don't know. So to be able to gather that data together, apply that in a way that's consistent is something we're able to do with the summer. We've partnered with groups like Modus Global to use their Modus One technology, other event organizations like ProspectWire. We've got 15,000 players now from top to bottom in our Future Star series, which has only been about 18 months in duration. So we've expanded into International Week, which is our New Balance and our signature event, which last year had 14 different countries or prospects from 14 different countries and put them in one different environment to play a three-game series to kind of get an idea what they're going to do in 10, 12 at-bats or X amount of innings. We then take that to the summer, of course, with the travel ball programs in Canada, United States, and Puerto Rico, and put them in like an NC2A kind of Connie Mack-ish tournament setting where we're playing things we can gather data on from flight scope to diamond kinetic swing data to be able to see acceleration and deceleration in guys' swings and what they're doing in certain situations and how they handle left-handed breaking ball and what exit speeds we're going to have on certain pitches, right? Able to do that and give that back to the player increases their development, but also from an evaluation standpoint allows us to see what we really have. So we're kind of unifying the amateur ranks a little bit in the summer.
So Matt, how are analytics different at the collegiate level versus the professional level?
Yeah, so I kind of touched on it a little bit earlier in that most of it is used for player development. And I can't remember the panelist earlier this weekend that mentioned that some of the measures that a TrackMan or a FlightScope measures are kind of intrinsic and gives you like a unique fingerprint for a player. And the question is always, how do we utilize what's there? How do we look at his horizontal and vertical movement for using a pitcher as an example? How do we leverage his horizontal vertical movement? The way he throws his fastball, curveball, how does he mix up his pitches? How do we optimize pitch sequences? What pitches give the most plate separation if they're coming down the same pitch tunnel? Those sort of things. So it's about leveraging strengths for an individual and shoring up any potential weaknesses. Say if a hitter really has high exit velocity in most areas of the zone, but you identify a particular area in the zone where he's got a lower exit velocity, then maybe he needs a different approach and you know, coaching that player that earlier in the count, you need to lay off this pitch. Well, helping them recognize what that pitch is. Early in the count, you need to lay off this pitch. As you get into, you know, a pitcher's count, you need to take a different approach. Instead of trying to drive it through the center field fence, you need to hit it over the second baseman's head or something. So,
how much penetration is there at this point in, you know, in working with college teams? How many colleges are you working with?
A small handful, half a dozen or so.
Got it. So then let's talk about kind of obstacles for all of you, and I guess Jared, we'll start with you. What's the biggest obstacle for you in getting teams and players to embrace what you're doing?
Sure. So we found a lot of resonance with a lot of the features. We have guys like Dusty Baker, Lloyd McClendon have been with us since the beginning, and Jeremy has joined Monsterful as a consultant, I think it was August. Is that right, Jeremy?
August of 17, yeah.
And so we've made tremendous strides in a lot of different ways in regards to the features that we've added. You know, we've tried to be nimble, making sure that at each level of the game, we are tying it together from youth baseball on through the bigs. And in terms of obstacles, you know, we're really moving fast on a lot of the things that we're building. It's really just a sort of a hardware thing. So if you think about what we all have in our pockets right now, we essentially have a powerful computer in an iPhone or an Android phone. And you think back to, you know, I watched Saved by the Bell, and Zach Morris had that big brick phone like this. And that's what's happening in VR right now. So there's so many different players in the space. Eye tracking is a huge thing that's coming this year and early next. So we're really excited about that, and we'll be integrating that certainly into the product. We've already been taking apart headsets back home and putting them together to really skate where the puck is going. Just knowing that there are so many different advancements coming. Certainly the three points with regard to hardware that I think everybody who's used a VR product in some form or another, whether it be baseball related or otherwise, you know, field of view, so that you can see sort of with clarity out of your periphery. And then resolution and frame rate. And so it's kind of a juggling act to optimize all three, but we have a tremendous team that we are, you know, looking at building the product for next year and kind of making sure that, you know, we implement the different things that we know are going to be helpful when those things hit, which is very soon. So can't talk about it too much quite yet, but we have a new headset that we'll be, you know, bringing to teams at all levels of the game. From the MLB clubs we'll be working with, as well as the dozen or so NC2A programs. We'll be shipping this a new headset that'll really make a big difference in terms of what we're able to produce.
And then, Matt, what are the additional obstacles involved in kind of selling this to college, you know, getting colleges to buy an analytics versus at the professional level?
Yeah, I think it goes back to financial resources, and not all colleges have a budget to spend money on a TrackMan or, you know, FlightScope or even a Rapsodo. You know, but that I'm seeing a little bit of that parity, you know, a gap in competitive advantage. I mean, the schools that you would think would have TrackMan, you know, the SECs and the ACC type schools, but you know, they're starting to be a little bit of a closure in that the lower tier and mid tier Division I teams are starting to embrace technology. And you know, all it takes is one donor, whether that's a draftee from a lower tier school that gets into the professional ranks and sees the advantage of technology and makes a donation to his school and says, go buy a TrackMan. Now this lower tier kind of non-competitive team has a TrackMan. Or it could be, you know, an academic type school where, you know, just spits out doctors and lawyers, and they make one donation and says, I want you to be on the forefront of technology and go purchase some equipment and develop your pitchers using FlightScope. So I think that's going to be a trend that we'll see continuing in the future in the next, say, 3 years, that more and more schools that you wouldn't think would have a budget to spend on technology will all of a sudden have TrackMan and FlightScope systems with them. The other challenge is, I think, just buy-in, that it just hasn't penetrated to the same level as the major leagues. So you have some traditional coaches that are maybe hesitant to embrace it, but like Jeremy said, I think it's a complement. You know, it's the objective data is complementing the traditional methods. It's not a replacement for it. And once coaches understand that, then they're on board with it.
So where do you think we are, I guess, along the timeline? Because, you know, I know there was you know, with analytics in Major League Baseball, took a little while. So where are we at in terms of development of kind of, you were saying, like that buy-in at the at the collegiate level?
I think we're fairly early on, and there's, you know, widely varying states of sophistication as far as what colleges are doing. There's articles about Iowa, and Desi, the pitching coach, said I could specifically mention them, as long as I shed Iowa in a good light. So there's sophistication there with Iowa. Other teams are getting it installed and don't know what to do with it, and are really doing nothing with it until they ask for help. So I think it's still really early on. I don't know exactly how many. I'm not affiliated with any of the technology companies, but FlightScope seems to be getting more of a foothold, several dozen, across the college ranks. A couple months ago, I heard somebody throw out a number somewhere around 40 as far as the schools that have TrackMan. So about 40 schools have TrackMan. I don't know how true that is. So I think it's really early on, and as more teams embrace it and start using the technology, I think other teams in their conference will see that and bring on technology. And then I think the innovation will also take off as far as the knowledge of what to do with it. There's a little more sharing at the college level, I think, as far as, when somebody comes up with a use for a technology, I think it's shared a little more at the college ranks. So I think still very, very early on as far as technology at the college level.
Jared?
Yeah, I wanted to pick up on Matt's point. I think communication and shared understanding are some of the obstacles as well that I find interesting. And we've been addressing sort of each day. Every one of the things that's interested me is that you find folks at different levels of the game or within a clubhouse. You have, the coaches, some of the players will look at, this is what the Ivy League guys upstairs want me to do. And that's something that we've, heard a fair amount of. And it's really making sure that all interests are aligned, towards the same sort of goal. And for us, that's been a matter of taking sort of API access and data and, spitting out a CSV of all the raw data from our product. That's been something that's certainly interested front offices. And then, with hitting coaches and players, they're looking for something a little bit different when it comes to just seeing the action of a pitch or, getting rhythm and timing. But for us, it's been an important, the solve there, which is, one I think that in many ways was harder to get to at this point, but I think it's been exciting to find the resonance in our approach is to combine all levels of the game from front office to scouting, like Jeremy here, and then my man Chris Dickerson right there, who I'm calling you out, Chris, who's just joined the Monsterful team. And from a player perspective, really bringing sort of the bona fides there, but also the knowledge of what it takes on the field to, really translate some of the technology to the field, and also tie that in with what's being looked for from hitting coaches and front offices as well.
And Jeremy, how do you make that translation?
So, our guys, our coordinators, we have guys like Roberto Kelly, Benji Gill, Chad Moeller, Steve Randolph, big league established guys that had pretty good careers. One of the hardest things with them is getting them to just understand it, just understand why they need it, right? Understand why they need this information, why it's relative to the player today, why it's going to be more relative tomorrow as we continue to make advancements in these areas. That's the biggest challenge we have, is getting the subjective to merge with the objective. The players today, the young kids, and even the kids in the systems, the minor league systems today, they want it. I mean, they want the information. And from an evaluation standpoint, we're using it. We're using advanced analytics in some places, and we're using simple in the draft room because, again, there's more difficult ways to quantify it. Finding ways to make that language universal, finding ways to get what we understand we're going to use to evaluate a player and ultimately what to pay him, right? What we're going to pay people, that's what this is. We need to understand how to pay that, what we're going to pay them, what we're going to get in the future, and getting the players who have hit 291 over 14 years or won a gold glove to understand defensive metrics and how that's going to work. That's been a little more difficult. However, our guys are open to it. They've taken it. They've run with it. They've gotten past the intimidation factor of the numbers, and they're able to apply it and help the players grow. We've seen pretty instant feedback and instant growth. And with the VR, in designing those, those analytics and what we're going to use and how we're going to evaluate players and what that can project out to, the applications are endless. When we're able to take a player who hit 30 home runs in the big leagues last year, and show him where his bat enters the zone against a 95 mile an hour fastball, in real time, how it got through the hitting zone, what angle it got through the hitting zone on, where it accelerated and decelerated, and what the result was, and then quantify that with swing and miss percentage, what time, when he recognized pitch, how he recognized it, and the accuracy of that. It's pretty instant reinforcement to what you're trying to communicate.
So so Matt, you know, you've worked, you know, with this at the collegiate level, and Jeremy, you know, you've worked with analytics, you know, now a bit at the high school level. How far down the kind of development pipeline do you see this going? You know, how much do you see it expanding in high schools? Could we see this in the high club level, et cetera? Where do you see this going?
You know, for me, we're talking about different levels of development, you know, whether you're 8 years old or 25 and still developing in the big leagues. So everything's going to be different, right? From a high school standpoint, you're talking about freshmen, talking about guys that you know, kids that begin to learn their bodies a little bit, show up a little bit. You know, you're younger than that, they need to play catch, right? We just need to play catch and pick up a ground ball and learn the fundamentals, and they're always learning the fundamentals. But when you're talking about a high school level, you're talking about players that naturally separate themselves in the pyramid of the game. 14, 15 years old is when you want to start quantifying this and teaching them how to use it, because their brains are maturing as well. You don't want them to show up at 18 or 19 and have no idea what they're talking about. If this is the wave of the future, this is what we're doing in the game today. And the development staff has to be on board with that too, and that includes their travel teams. One of the biggest problems with some of this stuff is there's so much misinformation and misunderstanding of it. You know, you watch Twitter, if anybody watches Twitter, for some of these hitting coaches, and it's just off. There's no way around it. It's just off. I mean, we'd be remiss to not accept the fact that if we hit the ball at a certain, you know, speed through the hitting zone, a certain angle, we're going to hit the ball further. We know that. The power's been around a long time, right? So we're finding ways to quantify that, and people teaching power incorrectly is hurting the game a little bit. So we have to make sure that we're taking all this from the sabermetric community, which is how we're going to continue to do this as we continue to evolve, and we make sure that we get it to players who can handle it. If they can't handle it, it's going to get lost. And if we can't relate it, it's going to get lost. And if it gets lost, it's no good. So being able to put that together at a 14, 15-year-old level is about where you'd start.
I'll tell you anecdotally, actually, I coached my 9-year-old's little league team, and I was looking for an app last week to keep score. And you know, to have to keep stats and pitch counts and such, and I found, some of you may be familiar with the Game Changer app owned by Dick's, and someone, a colleague of mine, jokingly said to me, "Hey, does it do spray charts?"
Yeah,
and it does. And I was like, "I'm not sure about showing the 9-year-olds their spray charts just yet," but I mean, it'd be, you know, interesting. But yeah, I don't know that, you know, I'm gonna be working launch angle with the 9-year-olds just yet. Maybe when my son's 10.
What's the spin rate?
Yeah.
You know, but surprisingly, we have people doing that. Yeah. I mean, and that we have people doing that. We have people taking kids at 8, 9 years old who just be loving to play baseball, right? I mean, they're just getting started. And we're talking about hitting the ball at the top of the cage. And the human body isn't ready to do that yet. And it's just not. So you have to have a physiological understanding of what you're doing, a more realistic expectation of who you're working with, and be able to grow them incrementally. And that's missing a little bit. So be able to take this and tie all that together at that age is where you want to start.
One of the interesting things at that age, being able to see your swing through the zone, where it was versus where it should have been. That was one of the first things that, you know, Coach McClendon had suggested that we do, because that visualization, it really helps you build that muscle memory. You know, you're only at a certain age able to develop muscle memory, but it's very helpful in terms of, you know, sort of removing some of those, call it fallacies or something that maybe is given too much attention in terms of swing plane. You know, as Jeremy said, I think for us, we've seen a lot of different ways in which our product is used at younger levels. You know, being able to sort of translate some of the things that Jeremy does with player development, we've made that part of the system so that it's a sort of a part of the product's brain. And I think what's interesting is, with the visualization, it's a great tool that sort of isn't offered in a 2D setting, or, you know, previously, you know, it wasn't something that you can really internalize, and it's been really helpful.
At the same time, I will be looking at those spray charts and see if my kid keeps hitting ground balls to the shortstop over and over again. Then we'll work on that, but because we are going to use the app. Matt, what do you see now dealing with it at the collegiate level? You know, how much are you hearing from players saying, "Oh man, I wish I wish I had access to this, you know, years ago.
Every athlete's different. You know, I think back to when I played, I may have been interested in wanting to know and dig a little deeper and understand, you know, launch angle and what was my exit velocity and how do I best optimize that. And if, you know, if I'm hitting, you know, 80 mile an hour exit velocity is my average, then maybe I shouldn't be trying to hit it at 25 degrees. You know, maybe there's a better launch angle. Maybe I should be hitting 10 to 15. Other guys just get in there and, you know, I heard one coach say that, you know, their approach is, you know, they grab the small end of the bat and hit the heck out of the ball with the big end of the bat. So, you know, different people want to hear different things and will process things differently. So I think it's very important to know the athlete. You don't want to get too much in their head. There's a funny video probably a lot of people have seen, a guy describing the golf swing and saying, this is very simple. All you do is, and he goes into this long diatribe that's, you know, really technical terms, it's just completely not understandable. And it's sometimes when you are telling hitters, giving them sort of the internal focus, like this is what you should be doing with your body, it can kind of cloud their approach and make it more difficult. Or if you take sort of the external focus and say, hit it over the second baseman's head, they will naturally arrange their bodies to do that and figure it out. They're athletes. They're going to figure it out. So taking it highly individualized, I guess, is my point. And that, you know, some people want to dig into the details and understand the why of why, you know, why they're getting the direction that they're getting. And some people just want to tell me what I'm supposed to do.
So just so you guys know, so in about 15 minutes, we'll start with questions. There are cards in the back of the room. Right, Mark, from the back of the room?
Yeah
that if you want to just write your questions and we'll get them up here. I want to take a big step back and ask you guys, how did you get into this in the first place? Because each of you have very different backgrounds. So I don't know, Jeremy, if you want to start.
So my last year cross-checking was with Seattle in 2015. And as I stepped away and tried to figure out what was next, there was a group of professional players living in Houston who just needed some help with development. So while I was trying to figure out what to do, I brought on some guys with me and we started to devise development plans. Started with subjective evaluation, added some objective data, and kind of broke it back down and built it up. A couple guys went out and had success. Brady Rogers, who I'd actually drafted out of high school as an area scout, was with the Astros, and his 2015 season was a 5 ERA in the Pacific Coast League. And he crosses by his delivery, can execute his breaking balls, there's no separation and no deception. And he's a touch and feel command and control guy who has to be able to execute on both sides of the plate. Through breaking down his delivery, working on his acceleration with his arm speed and separation on the breaking balls, as well as fastball changeup command, he went out, was PCL Pitcher of the Year, All-Star, you know, went to the big leagues, right? David Rollins was a guy who didn't have a breaking ball with Seattle, with we taken the Rule 5. We worked on his delivery and his execution, his lower half acceleration, and showed him how his execution, his breaking ball in and out of the strike zone would get him back to the big leagues and pitch well. And he improved his command and control and reduced his walk rate dramatically and got to the big leagues halfway through. So guys like that needed some help. In that time, I started figuring out and taking a look at the amateur world, and it was, I mean, it's a mess. I mean, it's just a mess. So trying to tie that together and find a better way to get back to some players we've lost through some of the privatization in the game, as well as communicate proper development with what we're doing at the highest levels, was the objective. And that kind of took off, and we have the New Balance Future Star Series, which is now the global player identification and grassroots effort of New Balance Baseball.
So Matt, from nuclear submarine officer and finance, managing finance teams at Lowe's and analyzing oil and gas investments at ConocoPhillips, to baseball.
Yeah, so I played 2 years of college baseball at Holy Cross, and they just made the regionals for the first time last year in like 38, 39 years or something. Nice. So they went 1-2 at the Oregon State Regionals. That was exciting. They got a win in the regionals. But then, you know, once graduating college, you know, spent 7 years in the Navy, nuclear submarines, and then, you know, got out, spent time in corporate America, at least doing some quantitative type analysis with projects or with moving into finance and then managing teams, doing budgets, financial forecasts. Very heavy component once you get into kind of that leadership and management. There's a lot of coaching, developing, and mentoring people. Just randomly through my network, I heard about a team that had installed TrackMan, and they had collected about a season's worth of data, and they needed some help. So I, you know, volunteered to help in my spare time. Spent some time coming up with some recommendations as to, you know, kind of how they should go about implementing it and taking advantage of it. Did some initial analysis, and you know, they were floored. They loved it. Started thinking, you know, I'm not sure I really like finance. You know, what am I doing? Reached out to some other coaches and started getting involved with some other teams, and said, you know what, like, no more finance. I'm quitting. So I quit. Started Power Alley Analytics, and ask me in 5 years how it's going.
And then, Jared, I think when we talked on the phone the other day, I forget the exact word, you were basically like, I'm a tech guy.
You know? Absolutely. I built apps and sites for a number of different different platforms, but I would say my last gig was a big data platform that we built. It's on track to be a $100 million company this year. I was the fourth person to join. I was the head of product. And so looking at everything from machine learning there in terms of social media influencers, everybody in this room who's on Twitter or Facebook, you know, you're being tracked by my former company, looking at how which audience you reach and you know how you might best promote a given product. But this is what we're doing now, a whole lot more fun. Kind of started at Safeco Field. Actually, I was trying to convince my dad for years to come down and have a catch. He gets to the ballpark, you know, 5 hours early, and he works hard. And so I know he didn't want to give me that Field of Dreams moment because he'd have to shower before going into the broadcast booth. And so for us, it was something that we were on the mound throwing the ball around. This has been an idea I've had for, you know, a number of years, and timing's everything. So sort of VR, cloud computing, in terms of, you know, being able to do a lot of cloud intelligence work that, you know, it just felt like the right time. So I started the company a week after having that catch. And then prior to that, I've built apps like Snapchat-like apps that have gotten, you know, half a million downloads. And, you know, this is my way of really correcting the past, because I was much better at baseball than I was at basketball. And I played basketball, and all it did was, shoulder, knee. So this is, this is my way of getting back into baseball, which I should have stuck with from the start.
So you are like a modern-day Field of Dreams, going to have that catch, and now here we are. That's cool.
Right.
Jared, we were talking before we came in here about how the system basically learns the hitter. Can you kind of talk through that? So on the one hand, you have to, you know, process all the data so that the batter puts on the goggles and they quote unquote see Chris Sale or Max Scherzer.
Sure.
But how does the system adjust to the hitter?
So we have a number of different things, from just being able to look at what a guy's doing with his mechanics and internalizing that. But from the standpoint of each session that you take as a hitter, what we're looking at is, what are you doing with the bat? Are you struggling when a guy changes eye level? The artificial intelligence is figuring out what are the different tendencies that you may have and working to exploit them. So each session, it's very helpful, because from sort of swing number one through swing 1001, you're getting a smarter version of a Scherzer, because he's looking, or the computerized version is looking at what you're doing with the bat, and then attacking you if changing eye level is one of the things you might be struggling with, or pitches on the inside half of the plate. That's something that you're able to then turn on auto mode, and just go to town and take a number of at bats and improve.
How accurate is it? What I mean by that is, have any of the pitchers who are programmed in there kind of seen themselves pitch, and what are they, in the system, and what do they think?
That's a good question. We haven't done that just yet. It's really been hitters that we've focused on.
You ever had that meta moment where Clayton Kershaw is hitting off of Clayton Kershaw or something?
I'm sure that'll come very soon.
For all of you, we were talking about this a bit the other day. How big of an issue, because I know sometimes comes up, is data ownership? Kind of who owns the data, the players or the schools, the teams, and how much, does that come up, particularly when a player, becomes a free agent, or a player is going into the draft, and there is data about this player's both, frankly, successes and failures.
So
every player is going to own their own data, right? I mean, it's them. They're playing. So they're going to get their information no matter what that is, good, bad, or otherwise. With the partners that we have, you know, the FlightScope data, the Diamond Kinetics, the Modus One, we're going to do something with SynapTech for vision testing and development. With the partners that we have, as well as subjective evals, that's all in our database, right? So it goes with the Skadden report. It goes with the role building. And the reason why that's all there is because not only do you want, you know, obviously predictors, but you want to be able to have a path to be able to develop them, because ultimately roles are what get you jobs. If these kids want to play professionally, you have to have a role. You have to have value at a major league level. If you don't have value for a system or value for major league level and you can't help a club win, you don't have, you know, a job. So to be able to have that data housed in one spot is kind of what we're doing, be able to unify that and both give it back to the players and make it available to those who want it.
In terms of data ownership, with what we're doing, it's really important for us to make sure that it can't be used against the player. From conversations we've had at the highest level of the game, I know guys going into contract years, it's something that it's important for them to make sure that they own their own data in a similar way to Jeremy, how Jeremy just mentioned. So we've taken a really keen focus on making sure that that's the case. And then for how the teams are able to use the data, you know, we've really siloed it off so that obviously no team can get another team's data, because each at bat virtually, you know, we're creating, you know, hundreds of different data points with every swing and every pitch that a hitter sees.
And Matt, what about you at the collegiate level? How much do you hear about the concern about where the data could go?
So I don't own, gather, or collect any of the data myself. It's all with the teams. I don't have too much conversation with them specifically about what, you know, how much they're going to share with, you know, the professional ranks that may come and ask. But I do know that, you know, the professional ranks want to see more teams with TrackMan because they are using that data to some extent. And then as far as, you know, who owns it and whether the players have access to it, potentially working with, you know, the Summer Collegiate League. There are several Summer Collegiate Leagues that have various systems, TrackMan or FlightScope, and they want to develop or have a data-driven development plan for the players in their league to then take back to their colleges. So at least they're giving the data back to the players and giving it to the colleges that these guys are coming from to use as for you know, data-driven development.
Jared, I'm curious, when a player puts on those goggles for the first time, what's the reaction?
Mouths agape, and if it's something that they've not done VR, to be transported to the field, you know, we've had a lot of great meetings over the course of this week and spring training as a whole, and certain guys who've never done, you know, never done VR are amazed by how real it feels.
Yeah. How does that reaction compare to the reaction of whether it's, you know, team leadership or managers, coaches, or whatever to the product?
So it's really been fascinating in terms of how at all different levels folks are looking for different things. So we were with a big league hitter, it was last week, Jeremy was looking at how, you know, from the left side of the plate, he has a different strategic approach. And so that swing plane feature was something that, you know, he was very keen on. Seeing his bat through the zone and how that differed from when he was, you know, hitting from the right side, whereas, you know, hitting coaches are looking for certain other things as far as, you know, aspects of the product that, you know, involve a pitch trail, and so that they can work different, you know, training strategies, and then data has obviously been a focus on the front office level. And when we look at the colleges that are going to be using the product and have signed up, it's you know. It kind of runs the gamut in terms of the ways they're looking at the product, and we've seen those hitters at that level just be much more direct, you know, to the ball, and you know, it really varies based on sort of where you are, what role you have.
So a very big question for all of you: what's next?
What's next is for us continue to grow within this and still give people their creative license to find out what's important to them numerically. We're, you know, looking at a major expansion across the country in the next phase, and I'm going to the Dominican next month. I'll be in Korea next month. I'll be in Canada next month to continue to pull players for International Week and bring them over here. From the virtual reality tech standpoint and the analytics standpoint, how that plays in there, continue to evolve the product to improve the technology, which is, you know, happening daily, seems like, in this industry, but to also allow people to tailor to their own from a what they're going to use to evaluate their big leaguers. You're not going to use this product different, you know, in the same rookie ball as you are in big leagues. It's completely different levels of development. So to be able to understand what numbers matter where is kind of the next step.
Matt, were you going to say something?
So I think it'll be leveraging the data from multiple systems or multiple, I don't know if cross-functional is the right word, but different types of data. So, you know, there's the what, which is, you know, a lot of the TrackMan and FlightScope data. Like, this is what happened. This is the spin rate of the fastball. This is the axis release point. But then the how is more getting into maybe like the kinematic or biomechanical data. Or even, you know, neuroscience and thinking like what was the player's at the hit as the hitter was seeing the ball come in, what was he thinking, what was his thought process, how did he react? So as an example, there's a school doing a study on shoulder fatigue, and they're using just a simple fatigue test in between innings from an athletic trainer and tracking that. And, you know, there's the opportunity to merge that with Doppler radar type information. The school has a TrackMan system, so if they start looking and combining the data and understanding, these are the indicators from the athletic trainer evaluation that showed that this player was starting to fatigue. If we line that up with the TrackMan data and see his extension or height side release, or his horizontal vertical movement starts changing, then you can potentially get some leading indicators or a tripwire for fatigue and kind of take action before he starts getting batted around. And that could potentially even get into the realm of injury prevention, which, you know, I know a lot of people are trying to solve the UCL issue. And, you know, if that opportunity to combine multiple technologies to evaluate injury prevention and get some leading indicators there to hopefully in the future prevent injuries.
I think picking up on something Matt said in terms of combining a lot of different technologies, biomechanical feedback, eye tracking, I think these are things that, you know, cognitive training coming together. It's a similar to what happened with, the internet, with the web, as far as all of these things coming together to allow for developers to take them and use them for their own means. I think that's something that we're very keen on. From the standpoint of different teams having different models and different analytical models and being able to apply those to the product in a way that, you know, again, picking up on Jeremy had said, you know, creative license, that's, you know, incredibly valuable because, you know, one front office might have a different take on something and want to use the product in another way than their counterpart. So that's something that we've been working to really create a platform that integrates various technologies. And you know, one of those things is also, you know, psychological, you know, performance. As far as we have a performance psychologist who's, you know, working with Masterful and has, you know, worked with a number of different guys at the NBA level, in the NBA and MLB and NHL as well. And with one of the teams that, you know, we're working with, they have a guy who, when the pressure gets on, you know, he goes from a 6 to a 4 in terms of his stress level, his tension. And so implementing that in terms of having an fMRI in your head, I see us going in that direction, you know, EKG in your heart to be able to measure, you know, how tense you get in a big moment, being able to recreate that moment in virtual reality. I mean, sort of, it's kind of blue ocean, but we have a roadmap over the course of the next 22 months, which I'm excited to show everybody in this room over the course of time.
Okay, well, we're moving on to the wonderful questions you guys submitted. And also, Chris Dickerson, if you wouldn't mind coming up, we're going to ask you to give the player's perspective because they pointed you out, so we're going to point you out too. But while you're on your way up, I'm going to ask the first question of Matt. How do you deal with analyzing the potentially limited amounts of collegiate data? You know, players, you know, there's not the thousands of at-bats that exist in the majors, much smaller sample size. So how do you deal with that?
Sure. Pitchers are a little bit easier in that, you know, a single outing where they throw a decent sample of their fastball and then their off-speed offerings, you can get a pretty good idea, a baseline of, of what to do with that pitcher. Hitters, you know, a lot more difficult. If you have, say, 30 home games, and that's how you're tracking the data, you know, four at-bats per game or so, it's 120 at-bats. Make sure to do that math right. And then, you know, how many times they're going to actually bat a ball. You start seeing that if you want to create a, you know, a strike zone heat map and understand where that guy really hits the ball well, that's going to present some challenges. So I think some of the portable technologies are a little bit more conducive to coming up with information about hitters. You still need to translate that from the cage or BP to what that's going to be like in a game. Just, you know, intuitively, you would think that, you know, exit velocity is going to be potentially a little bit less. You know, Alan Nathan had his generated velocity equation, and I think exit velocity is about 20, includes about 20% of the pitch velocity. So as the speed of the pitch changes, or doing front toss, you know, or batting cage, and it's coming in at 50 miles an hour, that same hit is going to look different on the field. So, you know, that becomes an issue, and as well as variability that you're not going to, hopefully you're squaring everything up in the cage or during BP. There's going to be a little bit more variability on the field. So it's a little bit more difficult, and I think there's not really a way around it necessarily. I think the important part is in the communication and making sure that the coaches understand the uses of inferences with only two or three data points in a particular location of the strike zone. But that is typically encountered with hitters. You know, like I said, pitchers, you get a decent baseline of their, you know, single outing. When you get a decent amount of fastballs, decent amount of off-speed offerings, you can work with that. Hitters are obviously much more difficult.
So now, Chris, thanks for coming up. So Chris Dixon's a 7-year Major League veteran, Reds, Brewers, Yankees, among other teams. So Chris, how, as a former player, what's your kind of perspective on VR, and what was your reaction when you first saw it, and what made you get involved?
Well, thanks for having me up here, first of all. But when I first sat down with Jarrett, we had a discussion, and we did a quick demo across the street at an academy that I often use in the off season. And once I saw it, and once I saw kind of the strike zone, the movement, and the realism of it, one of our first conversations was exactly what we have, is kind of translating that realism into what we have as the at-bats program, or the bats program, and now we can take this and virtually recreate the 10 to 15 minute hitters meeting. So at the beginning of every series, the first game, we're going to go through the entire lineup. We're going to go through tonight's starter. We're going to go through tomorrow's briefly, and then we're going to pretty much leave that up to video. And then we're going to run through the bullpen really quick, what the tendencies are, what he did his last start, if he's struggling, what his struggles are, if he's leaving the ball up, if he's struggling with his cutter, his curveball cutter. And when you get these different pieces of information, that's already your preparation moving on from there is, okay, if he's struggling with his curveball, then I'm eliminating that pitch for the rest of the day. And I'm going to pay attention for the first five innings to see if he does have command of that curveball. But until then, if he proves that he has command, I'm eliminating that pitch. So now if we're getting this data and we can go on and we can virtualize this, and going through these AI sequences, we can now go and take those four pitches and eliminate the curveball. And so when we get to a certain count where he might throw a certain pitch based on the statistics, you know, based on this data that we're now getting through the data, that we can go and we can have a virtual and visual approach before we even get in there. And so as we move forward, kind of especially with strike zone and strike zone judgment, it's going to be huge. And I think that's what really excited me, is being able to go in and do these 10 to 15 minute hitters meetings and then virtualize them. And then eventually, as this becomes portable, guys can take them and do their preparation in the locker room. And I think, you know, from when I was in New York, we were kind of we were already on the cutting edge. I mean, our lockers had the IBM touchpads in our lockers, to where it became game time. We could sit there and we could take our at-bats, and we can watch them while we're getting ready, And if we wanted to, we could just watch, you know, we could sort through the BATS program. And if those who are not familiar with the BATS program, it is a compilation of every pitch and every video that you have, and it's a sortable program, so you can see what exactly whatever result you want. You can watch all your doubles. You can watch all two strike pitches from that pitcher's prior outing. So from a visualization process, as we learn, as we get into, especially with sports science and mental acuity, just going on and simply just visualizing what you're going to do with your approach that day. If you want to watch all curveballs, like he said, you know, focusing on hitting that ball over shortstop, hitting that ball over second base, being able to replay pitches over and over and over and over, and then visualize yourself whether you're going to swing or not, I think is such a tremendous advantage, and that's why I was so excited to get on board and to build out this whole program of being able to recreate this hitter's meetings into virtual reality. So can be used on a number of different applications. You can go in and physically be dynamic about it and swing and recreate at bats to where you can accelerate your whole process, or you can just get in and simply take the 2D video in which you would probably watch your successes of your previous 4ABs and now virtually stand in and watch how that at bat unfolded. And I think that is that's a truly exceptional tool.
So how one of the questions that came up actually relates to this is, talking about, so now is the opportunity to stand in and see that, and get the goggles on. How much is too much? What I mean by that is, like, what is the proper length of time to have the goggles on? One of the questions was asked was even, you know, could there be too much and it starts affecting vision or anything like that? Is there a tipping point, or is it, hey, as much as it goes, great?
Yeah, I think it's just like anything. It's like anything in baseball. What is too much? You know, guys are going to eventually, and I think that's a really important thing that starts with Jeremy and starting with the ground up, is teaching guys not to go out. They don't have to go out and take 1,000 swings. The most important is quality over quantity. These kids are going to go out. They're going to want to, you know, they're going to hit all day. Eventually, they're going to get tired. Their swing is going to break down. It's the same for us. You know, you're going to go to the backfield during these guys right now are on back, probably hitting the curveball machine. But it's important to go out there and not take 100 swings, especially if you're playing that day. You go in, you see a couple curveballs, you track, you put a couple good swings on it, you shut it down, and you go get ready for the day. So I think that lies, as we kind of move forward with, especially with sports science and monitoring that optimal range and workload, which is really important. And so, especially at the youth level, you know, kids' bodies are developing, and it's really important for these kids not to go out and do too much. We're already seeing an epidemic in youth baseball where these kids are playing year-round, and what we're seeing now, you know, guys are regularly blowing out because they're part of this generation who literally goes from one team to another team, throws more, and by the time they're needing to step up and throw 100, 150 innings, the strength and the structural component is just not there. So I've run into a couple sports science people here, and I think that is the wave of what we're having right now as far as on the performance side is monitoring these workloads. I don't think there's too much, but I do think it's an invaluable process if you're like a pinch hitter and you want to see one particular pitcher that you're probably going to face in the ninth. And you can simply just go on for 3 minutes and look at 10 pitches and know exactly what you need to do during that particular bat. But other than that, if you, I think it's up to the players. But
one of the things we stressed as well is just, you know, being open and really learning as we go. I think that's really important. So we've been working a number of players at all levels through the product. And, you know, we found that, you know, a 20 pitches or so, just in terms of pitch recognition, is an optimal point for guys to get acclimated if it's their first time in VR. And then, you know, the same thing holds true when it comes to other aspects, but timing in terms of overall time in the system, you know, that's something that, you know, we're still working to figure out what that optimal time is, with the obviously the prime objective being able to translate the success to the field.
There's no one size fits all. What Chris was just talking about was a general baseline, for example, for a guy that's going to use
well, whatever he's going to use that day, right? But there's no one size fits all, and I think that's the point. You know, when we're talking about some of these arm injuries, which I mentioned a couple times, everything today in training from a pitching standpoint is velocity-oriented. I mean, we're just throwing hard. Guys are throwing really hard, right? And the human body can only handle so much. When you speed up your delivery and you pitch with that much intent every time you take the ball, brain's going to wear down, body's going to wear down, durability's going to change, right? I mean, and starters have more value than relievers, right, as far as innings and be able to pitch and be able to get guys out a couple times from the lineup. So we're kind of working against what we're trying to build a little bit sometimes, and I think that what I think everybody's kind of saying here in their own way is trying to kind of center that, bring that corral a little bit, and filter it out properly.
To each of you may have seen this at varying degrees. How much, if at all, are MLB teams using VR to test prospects before the draft? And if not, you know, do you see that coming?
I think you're headed towards a one of the things, part of the series that we do is we have regional combines, and that is where we take some of the athletic measurements that we're going to use to test guys and put them all together and get these baselines and put, combine it with subjective to get predictors of what they're going to be in the future. So I think what you're seeing is, in short, is the technology is going to continue to improve and bring these players into one central place that are the prospects and absolutely test them where you need to have them.
The predictive analytics aspect of what VR provides as far as being able to put you in the exact environment you're going to play in and against the pitcher you're going to face, I think that's only going to become the norm as time goes on and the technology improves.
But number two, have you seen it where, like, it would be, okay, let's take this kid and have him put on the goggles and face Chris Sale. Have you seen much of that yet?
I think it's certainly going in that direction. For a lot of the questions that we've been asked, there's been a really interesting focus on sort of how guys project to the next level. So everything from what you're talking about with draft prospects to guys in the farm system, seeing how they're going to face somebody in an upcoming matchup or if they get called up, I think that's something that it's only going to grow in terms of its importance.
Now, Matt touched on the studies being done about, you know, potentially could, potentially using analytics to help prevent injury. On the VR side, how much is your product able to help, potentially help that as well, as help players, you know, kind of fundamentally and thus potentially prevent injury?
Well, being able to cut down on how much time you might be spending in the cage, you know, you reach a point of diminishing returns. I think that, wear and tear on the body, as these guys were alluding to, there's a lot of work that in VR that you can do that doesn't involve, swinging. And, I think that's really important from a visual acuity standpoint all the way, to just getting rhythm and timing and internalizing that. So I think that it's going to change things as it gets adopted more widely.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could be beneficial because, just since we've been here visiting these camps, and, they have, live pitching, they'll have, side games at 10 a.m., and that becomes difficult when you're not quite warmed up. Obviously, there's usually a rush sometimes. There's a lot of meetings that happen during spring training where that breaks that routine where you might not be able to go in and get that activation. You might not be able to spend as much time doing your contrast or your regular routine. And then to go on out and have to perform at a 10 a.m., 10 a.m. B game, it's pretty difficult, and I think that's where a lot of injuries happen is when you're not quite prepared and you haven't had that proper activation period. And as I said, especially moving forward with early work where you're coming in, you're doing BP, and then you're going to a side field and, just to hit off curveballs, just to hit off sliders or whatever the case may be that day, is to maybe save yourself because, you had an extra inning game or you had a four-hour spring training game the day before, and you might need a little bit of a break. So to go on, in the comfort of your locker and just track these pitches and to virtually simulate some of these things that you're trying to work on is going to be of great importance when we're talking about, the physical rigors of getting through a spring training or 162-game season.
Last question, and Matt, I'll start with you, because you alluded to the idea of picking at the collegiate level, the data and such being used more for player development. So kind of for all of you, we hear about players making adjustments, young players, might come up hot, might have a freshman has a great season or a rookie, who's doing well, and then everyone adjusts, then he has to readjust to stay effective. So first with Matt, how do you see the schools you're working with, how have you seen the integration of analytics at the collegiate level help the players so that they're once the league adjusts, you know, they can readjust. And then on the virtual reality side, how can VR help with, you know, the ability for players to stay effective? But Matt, we'll start with you.
Sure. you know, like I said earlier, there's varying levels of sophistication at different schools. But one idea that's out there is a similarity index. So an incoming freshman, we'll use pitchers again as an example. You know, I talked about potentially having like a pitcher fingerprint that's unique to that pitcher. You know, how he uses sequencing, tunneling, what his fastball looks like, all the various parameters to get that pitcher fingerprint. If you do that for everyone on staff, and then you have an incoming freshman, you know, you use a similarity index to understand, given this prospect's unique pitcher fingerprint, how does he compare? Who's he most similar to on staff, and how have we developed that guy? Because you know, and has that been a success? Has that been a failure? So that's, you know, kind of getting up there. There's not a lot of teams that are sophisticated enough to do that yet at the college level. But as far as using technology to help a player, that can at least guide them in the right direction. That you know, we've had this pitcher on staff that's very similar to this prospect coming in. Here's how we've developed him over the course of 3 years, 4 years. We're going to apply that same development plan to this pitcher. It helps to kind of minimize that risk of making adjustments that could hinder performance.
And then on the VR side, guys, how do you see us, you know, kind of helping, you know, helping players, you know, when the league adjusts, helping players then, you know, adjust after the league adjusts, basically?
Well, from a, you know, the games and a game of adjustments always. The league adjusts to you, they adjust back. It doesn't matter where you're playing, whether it's high school or whether it's in the minor leagues or the big leagues, they're going to adjust back to you. So from the VR side, be able to recreate, as Chris has said, you know, the at-bats, just even the last five, six, be able to recreate what's happening and how they're adjusting to you, be able to adjust it painlessly, really. We're talking about not just physically painlessly, but mentally painlessly as well, in a controlled environment against major league pitching, against the guy that just did that to you the last four or five times, to be able to expand your growth in an environment where you can kind of dictate how you're going to do it and take yourself a little further is going to accelerate development. Cognitively, we've seen immediate translation in some of the pro guys we've tested, some of the high school kids we've tested as well, on the virtual reality from using the immediate quantitative feedback. It's happened quickly. We had a player in International Week who's a high school kid, who's a high-profile prospect, second, third-round type guy, who went out one day, struck out three times, went into the VR that night. Next day, two home runs and a double. Same type of pitcher.
Wow.
And it was all because of the adjustments he was able to immediately apply. The pro guys that we've had, you know, the spring training just started. So we only have their verbal feedback from what they've done since they tested it at home. What I can tell you is that their swings improved immediately. Their acceleration through the hitting zone improved immediately. The ability to accept the information they were being given instead of questioning. Because these guys are, you know, big league guys are trained to perform and they have their own process and you have to let them be that who they are. They have to make it their own. So when you're taking that type of ability and that type of athlete and giving him information, he should question you. He should ask questions. He should want to know how it's going to apply to him. And to be able to have that immediately translate and make them more receptive is accelerated development there.
I would add to that, I think Jeremy's exactly right. I think trust is such a big thing when it comes to players trusting that data. And so being able to look at scouting report in the way that Chris had mentioned, revolutionizing the at-bats program, I think it's going to provide, you know, tremendous results when a player can step in and take a full at-bat with the data uploaded, and it's something that can be internalized, kind of, as I've said before, it's something that it's brought to life in a whole new way, and so I think players will trust the data that much more when delivered through the medium that is virtual reality.
I think a perfect example is talking about making adjustments, especially for rookies when they get on, you know, when they get on the scene for the first time. There's no report on them, so oftentimes you have basically a very stock report. You know, drives the ball the other way. You know, does this well. But until you get the game and you get the actual quantitative data of what he's doing and how they're going to start shaping their pitching approaches against certain guys, you know, oftentimes you see these rookies come in for the first half and they have a tremendous first half, and then the second half they fall off the planet. So what if now we can take this data and then we can put it, all the data that's taken from their at-bats the first half, and you can see the sequences and what the trends were the first half versus the second half, and then get them into to reintroduce a new approach for the second half. If they're getting pounded in that second half, and then they're getting changeups away, or that first half they're getting a lot more first pitch fastballs, in the second half they're getting first pitch curveballs, first pitch sliders, and they're automatically getting behind in the count. All this stuff can be mapped through with the data that we have, and then actually getting players to actually visualize what exactly is happening, in the box before it starts to happen, I think is huge. So I think we're getting these guys to who can look 2-3 pitches ahead now and see exactly where that is in the strike zone and what that may appear. Perfect example, if you were to be an 0-0 and that first pitch is always a changeup, or because you're overly aggressive, okay, you're probably going to see a pitch. You're probably going to now start to take a strike, and to visualize that off-speed pitch and taking that, for a ball. Now your fortunes have changed. We're 1-0, and now you can start to look for that pitch in that one pitch in your zone, that fastball, or that an additional get-me-over curveball. But taking that data and what has happened over previous at-bats and previous sessions, and to go back and replay exactly what happened and to move forward with a new approach, I think is an accelerated learning process that can be done on our units.
All right, well, guys, that's all the time we have. So Jared Sims, Jeremy Booth, Matt Ryland, and Chris Dickerson for coming out of the proverbial bullpen and coming up here. Thank you all. Thank you.